John Kelly, the call last night on FS Midwest. You heard from Paul Stastny, and you also heard from Blues Associate Head Coach Craig Berube. Mike Yeo just too worn out to do the postgame press conference as the Blues come away with a 4-3 victory. That's really tough. I don't think we put in perspective how hard it is. You play a high-intensity game. Chris Ranji, Randy Carricker with you. 3:02, time check brought to you by Clarkson Jewelers, an officially licensed Rolex jeweler. Ranji, play a high-intensity game against Chicago on Wednesday night. Then you have to fly through the night into the altitude and play a back-to-back against a team that's played well early in the Colorado Avalanche. That's a really impressive victory for the Blues.
I think everything they've done so far has been impressive. Of course, they've got some warts to their game, and we've talked a little bit about that along the way, and it almost happened in last night's game, too, giving up that lead, the two-goal lead in the third period. They got bailed out by a call, but to be able to do what they've done with the injuries, I know they got Alexander Steen back, but they're still dealing with Robbie Fabry, not going to be there all season long. They've had all these other little minor injuries and players who aren't going to be available for them for months. To be able to do what they've done, and even though it is just 8 games through the season, to be, 12 points, to be top of the Western Conference at this point, having to play most of these games on the road. It's not just a back-to-back. It's not just a back-to-back having to go play in Denver in the second night of a back-to-back, but it's being able to do all of this with all of these factors combined, everything you know about this team to start the season, everything they've done has been really impressive.
And the Blues getting not only some bounces but some breaks. The NHL admitting today that fourth goal scored by Colorado should have been allowed. According to the rule, Rule 78.7, coaches challenge, goals will only be reviewed for a potential offside infraction if A, the puck does not come out of the attacking zone again, or B, all members of the attacking team do not clear the attacking zone again between the time of the offside play and the time that the goal is scored. Although there was an offside, it occurred prior to the puck clearing the zone. It did come completely out, which nullifies any goal review related to that offside. The entry into the zone immediately prior to the goal was onside, therefore the goal should have counted.
Wrong.
Tough.
Wrong.
Yeah, the NHL, they don't even know their own rules.
I'm doing my Trump. Wrong. Wrong. No, they got that right. I'm going to say right now they got that one right. Now they probably didn't get it right, but you know what?
Got it right for the Blues.
They did get it right for the Blues. I will take it. You know there are going to be times throughout the season calls are missed, but it is frustrating. If you're a Colorado fan at this point, and I don't know how many there are at the moment, but if you are a fan of that team and you're watching that game last night, now you know they've made a mistake which directly impacted whether or not they won or lost. You're pretty upset about that. What I don't understand is, how do you miss it? How do you have the benefit of the replay?
Right.
You see that it's obvious. How do you miss that call?
Perhaps they just didn't know the rule about the puck coming out again.
How do you not know that?
NHL... Darren Pang was... He was adamant.
He was. You're right.
And Darren Panger knows the rules, so it wasn't just him. But, yeah, you'd think the referee and the linesman would know the rules.
See, I didn't think anything of it. When I saw it in real time and then they showed the replay again, I said, oh, yeah, clearly he's offside.
Yeah.
How can you – yeah. Yeah. I didn't even think anything of it until today when we talked about it when I got here. Yeah. That, oh, man, they called that back, or they should not have called that goal back. The NHL said so. I was kind of surprised they said that.
Now, during the Cardinals season, we talked a lot about fundamentals and some of the Blues or the Cardinals' lack of fundamentals. One of the things, and I admit that I am a hockey novice. I am not somebody who knows intimately everything that everybody on the ice should do.
Yes, you do.
But one of the things that I have been told over the years is when playing defense, don't lay on top of your goalie.
Oh, that's a new rule, though. That's new school hockey.
Okay, that's like
that's new school
we've got
hockey.
The numbers involved now.
Yeah, yeah. Analytics says you don't want to lay on top of your own goaltender.
So Robert Bortuzzo,
right?
That's something he's just going to have to get used to today's NHL.
It factors into your Fenwick.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's part of your
That was unbelievable, wasn't it? Couldn't get off him.
I know he got shoved from behind a little bit, but he admitted that I was my momentum was taking me there anyway, and then when I got touched from behind, I'm like, well, I guess this is what's going to happen. That's something you can't do.
No.
That's really unbelievable.
Carter Hutton had a really good night.
Yes, he did.
Because of the three goals, there's nothing he could do about any of them. And when you look at what he was able to do in terms of the saves that he did make, a lot of them were spectacular.
And I think we talked about this the other day, actually, that you have two goaltenders. Obviously, Jake Allen, you are absolutely confident when he's out there now. He's established himself. He is what he is. But you also feel pretty good when you've got the backup out there. And I think there are a lot of NHL teams that are jealous of that fact. You've got some that are wishing they had one goaltender, let alone two. I'm not saying right. Carter Hutton should be a starter. I'm saying for some teams he might be able to start.
The perfect backup, though.
Yeah, he's great at that.
And he's wonderful. Awesome on the road. A lot of guys can't go on the road and deal with the pressures of playing road hockey. And most of the starts that he gets are away from Scott Trade Center, and he's terrific there.
And, you know, there was something interesting that Mike Yeo said to us last week when we talked to him about playing on the road early in the season and how difficult that is. I never even thought of this until he brought it up. He says, by the time you get to the end of the year, teams are pretty settled into playing on the road. They've got the routine down. They know what they're doing. They get it. They're fine. But early in the year, it's a lot tougher to work yourself into that. And the fact that he, the Blues, the entire team, everything they've done here in the first, what now, almost 2.5, 3 weeks of the season, it's great. And it's such a great starting point because you know there are going to be those down times throughout the year, Randy. You know they're going to have a couple of weeks here and there where they just don't look right. Nothing's breaking their way. But to put up 12 points this early in the year is awesome for them.
And the Blues, Chicago, and Colorado are the only three teams in the Western Conference that have played 8 games. The Blues lead the conference with a dozen points. L.A. has only played 6 games. They're 5-0-1 for 11 points. And then 2 points behind the Blues are Vegas and the Blues, or Vegas and Chicago. And the Blues will play at Vegas tomorrow night, the first time they visit there.
And we don't even have BT here to get ready for the BT Bowl.
It's too bad.
You know, Blues, Golden Knights, how could he not be here on a day like this?
It's amazing.
You know, last night I want to bring up something
about... He should
about,
be here. It's a criminal act that he's not.
It really is.
Yeah.
So what's next? Suspension?
Yeah.
Just a fine. I don't want him suspended. I want him here.
I want him here, too. Let's just fine him. I take the money.
Yeah, we get the money.
Yeah.
Correct. Scotty doesn't get any. We get it, and I. But something from last night's game, and Vlad Tarasenko, which clearly he's the best player on the team. We all know that. And I know before the season started, we kind of had that discussion about if he could do more, if he could be more. I know it's early. I know it's only 8 games. But Randy, he, to me, seems like he's even better than he was last season. And there was one play last night, and it wasn't a goal. It wasn't anything like that. But it was the play along the near boards. He's blocking out Nemeth with his big body. He finds a way to work himself in front of the goal and get a shot off. And he got the penalty, drew a penalty on that play. I thought that was one of the most impressive things, even though it did not result in a goal on the play. The fact he even got the puck and worked it in front of the goal, fighting off a defender with one hand and his other hand on the stick, and being able to get a shot off in that moment, that was really impressive.
Mike Yeo, and I don't know what he's done, but it's obviously the personality of Mike Yeo, has Vladimir Tarasenko playing with more pride than he ever played with before. Not that he didn't play with pride, but now, you're right, he's doing everything. And to me, the key to a hockey player is how much you notice him on the ice, especially when he doesn't have the puck. Notice everybody when they have the puck. You always see Vladimir Tarasenko doing something without the puck, whether it's the back check or whether it's using his big body like you're talking about to set up a play. He does a great job of taking the puck away. He's having a great start to the season.
How much of that do you think is how much is Jaden Schwartz helping with that?
I think that helps because the level of pressure on Tarasenko isn't as high. But I think the other thing, there are only two assist alternate captains now. He's wearing one of the two A's. Steen is the other one. And one of the things that Mike Yeo did tell him is, look, you're the best player on our team, and if you want to lead, lead through example. And apparently he's more vocal on the bench now than he's ever been. But he is clearly leading this club through example, and that's what he wants to do. He wants to be a leader.
Well, let me go back to Schwartz for a moment, too, because I wonder about that idea. I don't know Tarasenko personally. I haven't had a chance to talk to him for myself. I don't know if he's one to take on pressure like that. I mean, of course, those two players are on completely different lines. But does it matter that there's somebody else there's somebody else who's the focal point of the offense or can be seen as a focal point of the offense and not just him? I wonder if that plays at all in his head.
I think there are are times, and we've seen it with Tarasenko, especially come playoff time, where he tries to do too much, where especially offensively, he's trying to do too much. Doug Armstrong uses a great phrase. He says, you need to let the puck do the work. And a lot of times Tarasenko, you'd watch him and he wouldn't. It was just get the puck and try to shoot it, and he'd shoot it into traffic or it'd come off his stick. And now if you watch him play and you just concentrate on that phrase, he's letting the puck do the work for him. And I think the fact that he doesn't have to be the guy to score all the time, because Schwartzy is having a brilliant year, and these last two games have been sensational, I think that really does positively affect Tarasenko, because he doesn't have to be the one guy that is taking shots and scoring goals.
I mean, he doesn't present himself as the kind of person who would be bothered by having to be that focal point, and if nobody else is there to help him, then feeling like he's got to do it all. He doesn't present that to me, but I don't know that it's not playing in his mind.
When he talks about desperately wanting to win a Stanley Cup for St. Louis, that's not something that he's just saying to the fans. That's something that if you talk to the players and the coaching staff.
Oh, he wants to win. There's no question. Yeah.
And it's not just to win, but he wants to win here. He wants to win for St. Louis. He loves the area. He loves the fans. And I think he's learning how to do that, and I think Yo is a huge benefit for him.
Right now, honestly, Randy, can you think of anybody else that's playing better than him?
No, in the whole league.
In the league.
No, there isn't.
Although Connor McDavid's assist last night.
Yeah, beautiful. But how about that team? They're 2-4. They only have 4 points on the season. That's a Stanley Cup contender. Arizona has yet to win a game. And the team with the third best record in the West, the expansion Vegas Golden Knights, they're 5-1, and the Blues travel to Vegas for the first time ever tomorrow. Their TV analyst, Shane Knighty, will join us next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. With Chris Ronji, I'm Randy Carricker. We're at SunTrip Ford in Maryland Heights, right at the corner of Page and Lindbergh. Stop by and sign up to win some WWE Live tickets for tonight. We're giving away T-shirts and water bottles and stuff, so come on by here at SunTrip Ford. Let's head now to the Lou Fewes Kia Celebrity Line. The Blues at Vegas tomorrow night for the first time in Blues history. And Shane Knighty, who is the analyst for Knights games, joins us on 101 ESPN. Shane, great to have you with us. How you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. Thanks for having me along.
We're thrilled to have you with us. And the first question, and I'm sure you get this from everybody, is did you see this coming?
I don't think I've ran into anybody who saw this coming. It's been quite a start here for this Golden Knights team. And, it's interesting. We know all the horrendous events that happened here in Vegas on October 1, just prior to the season. And this team's really embraced the community, and the community's connected with the team. It's been a kind of a fantastic start for a lot of reasons, even outside of hockey. So it's carried a lot of meaning. But, coming into the season, going back, seeing this team assembled with George McPhee and his staff, and, Gerard Gallant coming in and in training camp saying, he's still trying to put, a face to a name and not really knowing his players. It takes a little bit of time. You're getting guys coming in from every which way, but the one thing we have seen, and boy, this team is, they've come together to play a real solid, systematic game. There's nobody trying to do themselves. They've bought into what Gerard Gallant wants out of his team, and that's to compete, to play with speed, and to play for 60 minutes. And for the majority, outside of that Detroit game, and maybe the very first game where Marc-Andre Fleury was fantastic in the second period against the Dallas Stars, this team is, they compete. That said, though, I think sometimes going in as an expansion team, you had that the opposition team maybe read into that a little too much. I don't think that surprise factor is there anymore.
How likely is it they can keep this up? Maybe not quite to this level. I'm not sure anybody really expects that to happen. But to go on and be a playoff team, and I know we're very, very early in the season, but is there enough there to think that they can do this all year long?
Boy, that's a real good question. I'm still trying to figure out, this team and, what moves are going to still happen. They're still carrying, 9D and 12 forwards. They got some injuries. The big one, Marc-Andre Fleury. You want him in your lineup, first of all, for me to say that, playoffs are going to be an option. Although Malcolm Subban has come in and played really well in his first two ever NHL wins. I don't know where this team goes, and I think, you know, tomorrow night's going to be a real test against St. Louis, who's playing some great hockey. They're a playoff team. Then they got Chicago after that. I think these next two games kind of maybe, you know, paint the picture a little bit better of what type of team. But that said, I like their style of game. You know, it's not fancy, but it's not boring. They play with a lot of speed. They push the puck ahead. They play as a unit of five. You know, you look at their defense core, nobody's going to really stand out to you. Probably the big name is still with their American Hockey League team, and that's Shea Theodore, who, you know, because of numbers and because of waivers and transaction options, he's not with the big club. But, you know, James Neal's had a great start. He's a recognizable name. We heard David Perron, who scored. He looks rejuvenated. So I think a lot of these guys have something to prove. And, you know, when you do that and they're trying to do it as a team, the success comes with it.
Shane Knighty, who's the analyst for the Golden Knights, the Vegas Golden Knights, joining us here in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. And Shane, when the St. Louis Blues came into the league in 1967, people in St. Louis didn't know hockey. And we had a broadcaster, Dan Kelly, who's one of the best ever, who essentially taught this community hockey. Is that part of your job, too? Do you have to teach Vegas hockey?
Oh, absolutely. I think that's more out in the community. And interesting, because it worked for AT&T Sportsnet here, and we just, Brad Mays on our panel, we just did a bunch of shoots now, just kind of, you know, explaining some details. But it's a fine line, because there is, I don't know if you ever have a complete non-traditional market anymore. I think there's a lot of people here, you know, that are transported from other places that know the game. So there's a real mix of people that know the game of hockey, that are hockey fans, have been for a while. And then there's obviously, when you come into a new market, you want to expose and show that game and teach it to others. So it's difficult to do. We try to throw subtle hints, but you don't want to sound too, I can't think of a better word than trying to dumb it down. You don't want to dumb it down, because there's a lot of knowledgeable hockey fans. And that's, I think there's probably more than not. So it's trying to show both sides of it, but certainly, the big goal is here to grow the game, and having an NHL team here in Las Vegas certainly helps that.
Because it's so early, are you able to get any sort of sense of how much people are falling either in love with the sports or embracing that it's there?
They're really embracing the team, and there's a sense of pride, because, you know, this is, and we've heard this a little bit, it's Vegas born. You know, the Oakland Raiders are coming here, and everybody's excited about that, but that's coming from somewhere else. This team was born in Vegas, and it's the first, you know, major pro sports team here in the city. So there's a real sense of pride, connection, whatever you want to call it, with the city and this team, and people have really embraced it. I think there's a lot of people that understand the game. There's a lot of people that are willing to understand the game, but certainly the excitement is in the city, and you know, the fact that they've come out and played as strong as they have certainly has helped that cause. You know, you wonder if they came out and, you know, had a, you know, an 0-6 start or whatever you look at, if it would be the same. But it has been a lot of fun to be a part of. I knew coming in there's going to be some, you know, there's going to be some bumps in the road when you're, but to be part of something from the ground floor, I think, you know, everybody from the, you know, the management to every part of the organization to the players is really embraced it and look forward to it. And hey, we're in the entertainment capital, you know, of the world, and when you plunk a hockey rink down on the busiest street, the strip, in Las Vegas, it just sets up for great entertainment all around. And we're seeing fans from other cities. I'm sure we'll see a ton of Blues fans. We've seen Sabres, Bruins, Red Wings fans, and they just have a great time. And you know what, it's mixed well with a lot of the Golden Knights fans that are here.
Other than the games themselves, which, I mean, that's the number one way to market your team, what has the organization done within the area to, you know, to market and to outreach so that people, I mean, everybody knows that the team is there, but to try and get people to come out and to get people interested, what sorts of things have they done?
They've done a lot in the community, and obviously because of the tragic events, I think, and credit to, you know, the players didn't even need to be asked. Everybody volunteered, from them right through, you know, whatever hockey operations to, you know, whatever staff, us broadcasters, to get in the community that way. But that was the plan, you know, even if that didn't happen, is you really need these players, and they've taken it upon themselves to go out in the community and to be a part of it and to help, you know, build this game around here. Everybody that's here loves being in Vegas first and foremost, and the fans, there's been a real good job of going forward. There's still lots of work because that's any team that moves to a city, and you mentioned the Blues, it takes time. But, and I think a lot of it starts with minor hockey. Me being down here, my son's involved in it, so I'm out there. And, you know, there's a junior Golden Knights program, so you're trying to grow through there. And it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen 1-2 years. It happens over time, but you build the game. And surprised, my son going to the team, the skill level that's there. So hockey's been in place. They've had some programs, but it needs to grow. And that's, to me, where you want to do it at that grassroots level. And that's how you build an organization. You build it stable. You've seen it happen in, you know, Tampa Bay, Nashville, those sorts of areas where it has grown and become a major sport in the city. And that's what they're trying to do here at all levels.
A couple more quick things for the Golden Knights TV analyst, Shane Knighty. The plan appears to be a great plan. You go get a bunch of young veteran defensemen. Gerard Gallant does a great job of coaching a system that keeps the puck out of the net. Then you go get guys like Neal and Perron. That's a pretty good way to start.
Well, it really is. And the interesting thing, and talking to a lot of scouts, and they're like, well, there's not really, you know, where you talk top six, bottom six, outside of, you know, Neal and Perron. Cody Eakin's playing between them. You know, Jonathan Marchessault, who had 30 goals, he's been under the lineup injury. He's another guy they're going to look to for offense. But, you know, Riley Smith, some of those guys have played top six. But all these guys have played the majority of this lineup. You can throw any of these guys out in matchups. You know, they're fourth line, if we call it that, with Belmar and William Carrier and Thomas Nosek. Not real household names either than Belmar has been in, but these guys play with speed and they're smart on the defensive side of the puck. So you can match any of these four lines. Gerard Gallant's comfortable with anybody playing against the other team's best. There's a real awareness these guys have naturally to play a defensive part of a team. And not only that, there's some real good penalty killers. So and they can all skate. So there's a high hockey IQ. There's some speed to this team. And then you mentioned Neal Perron and Marchessault, Smith. There's some guys that have scored and can provide offense. And, you know, the defense, there's some veteran guys, Englund, Garrison, some Spezza. You've got Nate Schmidt and Colin Miller, two real mobile defensemen that can move up and down. There's a mix here, and there's a method to the way they picked this team. And right now, it certainly is meshing together.
Any time in the past it was discussed about the possibility of moving a pro sports franchise to Las Vegas, there's always that concern of, oh, well, man, you can't have a team here because guys are going to, you know, they're going to be tempted to go do things and nothing ever closes there. But what I'm wondering is, where do players live? Do they stay far away from the strip? How are they handling this so far? I know it's very early, but what are they doing?
Well, that's the number one question you hear is, what's it like there? You know, being a Manitoba kid from Canada and, you know, working in Winnipeg the last 6 years, everybody's going, what's it? And my best answer I can give you is, it's kind of like Scottsdale. You live out in Summerlin, which is about 20 minutes off the strip. That's where their practice facility is, City National Arena. It's a top-notch practice facility, two sheets, brand new. Murray Craven, you know, helped build it. And, you know, he traveled around, got ideas from everywhere to put this forward for owner Bill Foley. All the guys live right around, so you're all within 4 minutes. They do all their morning skate, and you're tucked right into the Red Rock Canyon Mountains. There's churches, there's schools, there's shopping, there's restaurants. It's not all down on the strip. If you want to go for a night, sure, go down. But there's more than you need here, and it's a really, really beautiful place to live. I've certainly enjoyed it, but that said, yeah, there's temptation in every city. That's what I say now. But the new athletes aren't wired maybe the way they were 15, 20 years ago. The nutrition's and the way they train, all that is high on the list. And the way the game's played with the speed, you can't afford really a lot of nights where you might want to venture out.
Shane, there are going to be a ton of Blues fans there tomorrow, and I know that they're going to have a great time, win or lose, and it's really fun to watch the Knights play, and it's fun to have you doing the analysis. We appreciate you taking some time with us today.
Well, thank you very much, guys. Yeah, it is a unique, one-of-a-kind type atmosphere before the game, and they got a Toshiba Plaza. You got New York, a strip of restaurants, bars.
awesome. Hey, have a great night, and we'll hopefully catch up again soon.
Will do, guys. Take care. Thank you.
Take care, Shane. Shane Knighty, he's the analyst for the Knights on TV.
I know he said that, you know, it's kind of a lot like Scottsdale in Arizona. The only difference is Scottsdale closes at 1.
Earlier. Scottsdale closes at 10.
Well, depending on where you go.
Yeah.
Hey, Randy, I got to tell you about the places to go.
Well, I know where Mill Street is. Tempe doesn't close at 10, but...
Oh, yeah. 1 o'clock.
Yeah, Tempe's 1 o'clock. Scottsdale's 10.
Las Vegas closes at never.
Yeah, exactly.
So, good luck.
Coming up next in the Fast Lane, a crazy ending for the Thursday night football game. We'll talk about that next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. You heard from the quarterback of the Kansas City Chiefs, Alex Smith. You heard from Jack Del Rio and Andy Reid. The calls from Westwood One. And last night, a crazy ending to Thursday night football. The Raiders had the ball inside the 10, if you haven't seen the highlights or you didn't see the game, had the ball at the inside the 10-yard line on three different occasions. On first down, Michael Crabtree called for an offensive pass interference. That nullified a touchdown. On second down, the Chiefs were called for defensive holding. On third down, the Chiefs were called for defensive holding before the winning touchdown pass. And by the way, the play before the first pass interference was an apparent touchdown pass that was overturned because the backside of the receiver touched the ground inside the 1 yard line. It was a crazy end. And by the way, being an objective observer, not a Raiders fan or a Chiefs fan, all three of those calls were legit.
Yeah, yes, they were. And by the way, Randy, did he say pandemonium?
Yes, in chaos.
Did he say mob scene?
Yeah.
Was there chaos?
Totally.
Game of the year, don't you think?
It was great. Yeah.
I think that was a game of the year. It was certainly the finish of the year. I loved all of it. When I saw the first flag fly, I thought, yep, that's right. Then the second one, I was like, okay.
And
then
by the way, no way. Yeah, the second one, and I don't know who 38 on Kansas City is, called on him, but 23 was holding even worse. He was mauling his receiver, so you could have called multiple holds on Kansas City there.
Yeah, no, I think they got the calls right, but I love the fact when I saw those flags, and I'm like, yes, please, let's do this again. Let's have another untimed down. This is going to be fantastic. And when we talked about this yesterday, you know, I said it's going to be a shootout if Oakland is going to win this game. It's going to have to be because we're talking about two defenses that really aren't very good this year. But offenses that can certainly score, and that's exactly what happened in Derek Carr. 417 yards yesterday. Now,
impressive.
He's not always accurate. Sometimes, in fact, it happened late. There was the one throw, and maybe the throw to Cook that went over his head, and he had to leap up to get it. I think he might have been trying to clear the linebacker on that particular throw. But there could have been it could have been a little bit better. But for the most part, he got it done, and that was a really fun game. And it's funny because we have spent so many years now talking about Thursday night football, and usually the competition is kind of lame and the games are not very good. This year it's been totally different.
Yeah, we've been
Thursday
better,
night football, the best game of the year so far has been on Thursday night football. The Rams game early in the year was a Thursday night game. There have been a lot of really fun Thursday contests this season, which is not something we're used to.
No, and that's a good thing for the NFL, unless they happen to be going against a baseball game that features Chicago and Los Angeles, which probably didn't help them out an awful lot.
Well, I'm sure not.
That's part of the deal. Now, we talked, and pretty much every football fan talked, especially fantasy football players, about Amari Cooper not being targeted. And all of a sudden, the Raiders figure out, oh, yeah, we can target this guy.
11 receptions last night, 200-plus yards. That's what we were talking about yesterday. They have to get him the ball more. It can't just be Michael Crabtree. That can't be the entire offense. It can't be Carr to him. They did a great job of that. I'm not really sure what the reluctance was. It kind of seemed like whoever it was, whether it was Carr or Emmanuel, whoever was behind center, it seemed like they were kind of staying away from his side of the field. And I don't know if that was intentional. I don't know if there was a lack of confidence in him for a while. But last night they figured it out. They did the thing that everybody knows they needed to do, and that was get everybody involved.
19 targets for Amari Cooper. That they went to him
19 yes, they did.
Times.
That's a lot.
Yeah.
16 is a lot. So, I mean, 19 is a hell of a lot of targets, and they knew exactly what they needed to do. They did it. And I don't know what this means now long-term, Randy. Is Oakland now, are they better? Because 2-5 did not sound good. 3-4 sounds a whole lot more manageable. And now that division, you would like to think, is going to be closer because it started to seem like Kansas City was about to pull away there.
Yeah.
They haven't. They've lost a couple in a row here, and now things are looking a lot more interesting in that division.
And the next game for Oakland is at Buffalo. Then they get the Dolphins at home. And then they have, at Buffalo, at Miami, New England at home, and then the Broncos at home. But you're playing against teams that are, once again, dealing with some deficiencies defensively.
Those are all winnable games for them.
Yeah, they are. So not only do they look a lot better now, but the fact that they are now within a couple of games of Kansas City, 5-2 versus 3-4, that is a huge difference. And now it's a winnable division because they get Kansas City again.
Yeah, so we've made things a lot more interesting. It kind of looked like that division was going to uncomplicate itself, and it did not. And that's going to be better for us. It's better for us to talk about it. It's certainly better for fans to watch it for the remainder of the season because you want to see a division race. I like it, Randy. I don't know how you feel, but I do enjoy it when there is one clear team in the NFL that is better than everybody else. I think there's something enjoyable about that. But I also think it's pretty darn interesting when there isn't.
Yeah.
When a lot of teams are in it, it seems like all these divisions are up for grabs. I like when there's some parity every now
Nobody
and then.
Nobody knows who's good. And
I kind of like that.
It's beyond parity now. It's mediocrity.
Yeah.
But it's interesting.
No, that's it. It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, but it is fun to watch a team that just dominates everybody else. So when you have a Patriots team from a few years ago, when you have one like that, that's enjoyable. But there's also something really enjoyable about not really knowing what's about to happen.
Next up in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN, the Yankees and Astros prepare for Game 6 of the American League Championship Series, and Aaron Rodgers placed on IR by the Packers today. What does the near future hold for him? We'll talk about it next in the Fast Lane on 101 ESPN. A lot of baseball news. The Yankees and Astros play Game 6 of the American League Championship Series tonight at 7 here on 101 ESPN. Luis Severino pitches for New York. He'll be opposed by Justin Verlander, and you can hear the game right here on 101 ESPN.
I'm with you, Randy, and I'm with Chris Duncan. I think that Verlander's going to dominate again tonight, though it's the postseason. Who the heck knows, right?
You
don't know what's going to happen in these games. But he's been great. Last time out, he was fantastic. You're not seeing many starters go very deep in games during this postseason. But I'm rooting, and maybe that's what it is. Maybe it's just wishful thinking on my part because I want a Game 7. I want a Game 7 that I don't have to worry about who wins or loses.
That'd be fun.
I don't have to be nervous. I just want to enjoy the spectacle. You know what I mean?
The drama.
I love drama.
No doubt about it. Me too. I'm looking forward to that. It's been a while since the San Francisco Giants have produced a great player from their farm system. Of course, Buster Posey and Madison Bumgarner, Tim Lincecum, Matt Cain. They've had some great guys, Brandon Crawford, but not enough lately. So today, they hired David Bell, the Cardinals bench coach, as their new farm director.
Well, it's in the family, Randy. Buddy Bell was and still is for the White Sox. He's been in player development for them, so I think maybe the Bells know a thing or two about getting some players ready.
Yes, they do. And so congratulations to David Bell, and the Cardinals will start the search for a new bench coach, and the Nationals start the search for a new manager after firing Dusty Baker and his entire staff this morning.
Welp. I mean, that's what 192 wins in two seasons get you?
Yeah, but hey, they came up eight short both years.
Yeah. So if Anthony Rizzo doesn't bloop a game winner into center field, Dusty Baker might still have a job.
Respect me,
and I'm going to go 0 for the next 50.
Yeah, right.
Respect me.
But you're right.
0 for 50.
If that bloop hit doesn't occur, Dusty probably still has a gig.
And if replay isn't a thing, and Lobaton isn't initially ruled safe and then called out because he was off the bag for, like, I don't know, half a second, he still has a job maybe.
Yeah. It's amazing. It's a
fickle
business.
Man. I don't know about Mike Rizzo. There are a lot of things about him that kind of rub me the wrong way, and it seems like – but he just made the decision last night. That's what he said?
Right.
Just now?
This is the 14th manager – I'm sorry, 7th manager in 14 years that the Nationals have been in Washington. The Cardinals have had 4 managers in 37 years. The Nationals, 4 managers in 7 years.
Which, something is wrong if you're doing it that way.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe. 7 years, yeah.
Yeah, there's look, it's on you if you think you're never finding the right guy. How come you never find the right guy then? Why can't you hire the right manager?
And who do they go
What's
get?
What's the problem?
Who do they go get that's better than Dusty?
Well, what's interesting is John Heyman tweeting earlier, and it wasn't a report, but it was a suggestion that what if they go get Tony La Russa at 74 years old?
Tony will never manage again.
I don't think so either.
No.
I'm not sure why I thought of it, but okay.
Yeah. I mean, John Farrell, who's won a World Series and won some playoff series.
Yeah, just going to keep recycling guys.
Yeah, but I think that's what you need with that team. But you also need a guy that, at least in 2018, is likable enough for Bryce Harper that Harper thinks he has a chance. And you want to try to sign him, too.
So this will be his fifth manager since he's been up, or is it fourth? It's fourth or fifth.
This will be his fifth, I believe, if you include the interim.
Yeah. In his career.
Yeah.
Dude's like 25, and he's had five managers already.
Isn't that amazing?
It's ridiculous.
It will be four.
It will be four, whatever. Yeah. Four or five, whatever. Yeah. That's a lot.
That's amazing. Football, the Packers have placed Aaron Rodgers on injured reserve. He had collarbone surgery yesterday, and he's eligible to return for Week 15 at Carolina.
Just in time for the playoffs.
Yeah.
Just in time to lead them to a Super Bowl.
If they can play 500 ball leading up to Week 15, right now they're 4-2. So if they can be 8-6 heading into Week 15 and he comes back, anything's possible.
It's the NFC.
Yeah.
It's the NFC, so they can easily make it into the playoffs if they're like right around or just above 500.
There's no doubt.
So there you go. You get back right in time, hopefully, because it's his the broken bone is on his throwing side. Mm-hmm. So hopefully it doesn't hinder anything there. But, you know, if he's ready for the playoffs, they could win. I mean, they really could.
All bets are off. And finally, the NHL's Western Conference leading St. Louis Blues, coming off of a win last night in Colorado, will make their first trip to Vegas to take on the Golden Knights tomorrow night. It's a 9 o'clock start St. Louis time.
Yeah, just stay off the strip, boys.
No, not tonight. Just tomorrow during the day. Get some rest tomorrow.
Well, here's the thing, Randy. If they hit the strip tonight, it doesn't close.
They might never know.
There are no clocks anywhere. How are they going to know?
That's true.
How are they going to know when it's time to go back and go to bed?
When the sun comes up?
You can't see the sun inside the casino.
No. It's true.
They do that on purpose. Okay, that's by design.
I know. That's pretty smart.
And, you know, I'm not sure how many of those guys have smartphones, so they won't be able to check the time.
Well, your smartphones usually don't work in casinos either.
That's true. They don't want you to have that technology.
No, they don't want you to be able to communicate. They just want you to focus on what you're there for.
What if like three or four of the Blues players get caught at the blackjack table counting cards or whatever it is they do?
They're brilliant. That's not the Blues legal. Players are.
It could happen.
I don't think it's – they just throw you out of the casinos. You don't get
– No, they take you in the back room. They rough you up.
Yeah, like Joe Pesci, right?
Right, no cameras.
Yeah.
They give you a good once-over.
I hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah, that'd be bad. Yeah. Prior to game time?
Yeah. Wouldn't it be something if it was like Vince Dunn that wound up being the card counter?
Yeah, and then they have to say something happened to his wrist in practice, but really it was Bubba.
Yep.
Took a crowbar to it.
Not great.
Yeah.
It's the Fastlane on 101 ESPN, and those are your hot topics of the day. Coming up here at SunTrip Ford at Page and Lindbergh, Mark is going to join us for the 4 o'clock fight on 101 ESPN. That's next.
Thanks for listening to 101 ESPN. Find more at 101sports.com.